Welcome back to the Bell Witch Podcast with me, Swales, the Friendly Green Witch, witching in the 21st century. This is part two of Molly's interview all about mundane magic. So let's dive straight in.
We know that Reiki is one of your passions in life, and I wondered if you thought there was some overlap in Reiki and witchcraft and how they work, like on a not woo-woo level, like scientific and all that, because I know that's one of your subjects.
Oh, heck yeah. The way that I talk about how Reiki works, how magic works, obviously there's nuanced differences between the two, but I think they can work. They work really well together. If we're speaking at a high level, I think both practices are really paths home to our authentic self, to who we really are. And they're also paths into the present moment. If we're looking at like a scientific perspective, there's a through line in all of my work around the nervous system. That's really where, when I was a skeptic, I studied the nervous system and how it impacts trauma survivors. And then my entry into kind of this entire world was through a lot of Thich Nhat Hanh's work of bringing mindfulness into everyday aspects of life, seeing the through line between mindfulness and the nervous system, how we respond to stress. And so the way that I like to describe how all of this works is you have two sides to your nervous system, right? You have the sympathetic nervous system. That's your fight, flight, freeze response. That's your stress or your survival response. The side of you that thinks a tiger is chasing you when your Wi-Fi is buffering for just a little bit too long before an important meeting. Your brain really doesn't know the difference. Your brain and your body don't know the difference between that and a literal tiger chasing you. It's going to respond the same way, and it's going to pull all of your resources in your body and mind towards keeping you alive, towards self-preservation. That's the number one thing your brain cares about. So when we think about these practices, both Reiki and magic demand us to be in the present moment, even if it's just for a breath. And when we're in the present moment, your brain has this moment where it goes, I wouldn't be focused on this moment right here if there was a tiger over there. I wouldn't be taking a deep breath if I was preparing to run for my life. I wouldn't be stating affirmations or setting intentions if I was about to fight off a tiger or a bear or whatever, right? And so in doing that, we send this signal to our brain that allows us to shift out of that survival response into the parasympathetic nervous system, which is our rest, restore, and heal response. That's the state of your body and your mind where all of your resources can go towards finding equilibrium again, finding balance. And in doing so, we activate our body's natural ability to heal. Now, the reason that I love practices like mundane magic, where we're infusing it into the things we're already doing, is because when it comes to your nervous system and staying in that regulated parasympathetic place, consistency is more powerful than duration. Meaning 2 minutes a day is more effective than 60 minutes once a month or once in a while. And so when we start to do this while we brush our teeth or while we stir our coffee or before a big meeting on our commute to and from work, whatever the case may be, when we start to add these little micro moments of mindfulness into our day, be it through magic, Reiki, or some other practice, you start to build a more resilient nervous system. So instead of instantly going into that tiger response and thinking, oh shit, I need to prepare to run for my life or fight for my life or play dead and hope that tiger moves on, you actually have a moment to recognize, oh, there's my cute little brain thinking there's a tiger. It's not a tiger. It's just a letter from the IRS or whatever the equivalent over there is. And in fact, I don't need to run for my life or fight for my life or play dead and hope it moves on. Instead, I can choose a different response that helps me stay in that more balanced state. And over time, we become more and more aware of that tiger response in the brain, and we start to choose different responses. And then eventually that different response becomes the habit we lean on.
I think that's how spells work then. Is it about leveling, I want to say energy, but like in the body, I think there's something about vibration that they're definitely there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. If we think about, okay, let's think about an abundance spell, for instance. Say you'd want to make more money. Okay. Simple abundance spell, most popular one on Witch Talk or wherever. Everyone wants to make more money, especially right now. I have two paths I could take. Okay. Without magic, I'm just going about my life. I'm going to work, right? I'm doing my thing. I'm clocking in, I'm clocking out. With magic, I'm also going to work. I'm clocking in, I'm clocking out. But the way that I do those things is different just by the sheer fact of dropping into the present moment and setting that intention. You have a part of your brain called the reticular activating system, the RAS, and it basically acts like a coffee filter for everything you're experiencing in your life. So there's some research around this, and the number varies from here to here, but there are trillions of bits of information that you are taking in at any given moment, but your brain can process less than 100 bits of information at any given moment out of trillions. So your brain is making a lot of decisions about what you pay attention to. And so if I said to you, hey, how many red cars have you seen today? Could you answer me?
No.
No.
Not at all.
But if I said to you tomorrow, I want you to set the intention that you see red cars. All day you'd be like, there's a red car. There's a red car. There's a red car. Oh my God, there's red cars everywhere. And it's not that there's now more red cars available. It's that you've primed that coffee filter in your brain to bring that information through the sieve of your mind and your awareness. So now you're noticing those red cars. And so you're drawing them to you, even though they were already there to begin with. You just didn't see them because there's trillions of bits of information. And so we can move through life determining what comes through that coffee filter. So when I set the intention in a spell of abundance, whatever the spell might be, it might be just putting some cinnamon in my coffee, stirring a dollar sign in, stirring the euro into my coffee. I keep having to switch to the UK, the pound, whatever it is. I don't know.
Los Pinos again.
Ah, damn it. The listeners are going to be like, she doesn't know what she's talking about. So you stir the pound into your coffee, right? You're priming that reticular activating system to see more examples of abundance in your life. So now all of a sudden, the $5 bill that you find in your coat pocket becomes exciting. You're like, oh, it worked. I'm going to keep doing it. And as you keep doing it, then it's like you become bolder. And maybe when you clock into work, you ask for that raise. You apply for that job that maybe normally you'd be like, oh, I couldn't do that. Or maybe you didn't even see the job posting. But now that you're looking for those examples of abundance, you can find them because they're coming through that filter.
That's the most un-woo explanation, but it's true. Witchcraft really is a state of mind. It is.
Yeah. And there's so many different elements, not to say there's no woo involved. Like, of course there is. But if you're someone who wants that tangible, grounded, like in the science of is this working or not, just that intention alone. That's why I always say you are the magic. It doesn't work without your intention. And you don't have to overthink that intention, right? Like it could just be, I'm doing this spell for money, honey. And that is enough to prime that part of your brain to start to call that in.
I've heard it called the cupcake theory or something. It's a cupcake. I remember hearing this years ago on TV, really obsessed about this cupcake on a shelf. And then you go out about your life and your cupcakes everywhere.
Yeah, totally. Same thing. Or an example I always give is, say you want to build community. Like you feel like you're isolated and you want to make more friends that are like you. And you go to a coffee shop, you get your coffee, you're stirring in whatever you put in there. I know creamer's not a thing over there, but your milk and your tea or whatever. And you look up at it, there's a bulletin board with 52 different flyers and business cards on it in the coffee shop. And your brain locks in on the book club. And you're like, oh, I love that book. If you hadn't set that intention, you would just see that bulletin board and maybe you'd pick something else out of it. Maybe you'd pick up the flyer that's your favorite color instead. But because you had that intention and your brain is looking for evidence to prove to you what you believe, now it starts to see it. And now you can take that action in that direction, right? It's so empowering when you start to understand that it's not an accident what you can bring into your life. You can actually tell your brain what you want and then start to find examples of it. And the more you find examples, the more you see examples. It's the coolest thing ever.
I love this witchy life. It makes me so happy. Like when I was young, I was so depressed all the time. Mm-hmm. because of the negativity, the negative mind and the words I spoke to myself internally, which is one of my things. I'm obsessed about, like, literal speaking of words and the power behind them.
Yeah. Spelling.
Spelling. Right? Yep, totally.
Yeah. The reticular activating system works in the reverse as well. So if you're constantly putting yourself down, you're going to start to find evidence that those words are true. And so that's one of the reasons why in the book, I talk about the fake it till you make it with affirmations. You know, affirmations can sometimes feel really hokey, but your brain doesn't know the difference between I make a shit ton of money and actually making a shit ton of money. If you say that and you set that intention and you look for that evidence, you'll start to find it, right? Slowly but surely. And I talk about in the book, the science behind smiling. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah.
In case anyone's not familiar, when you smile, even if it's fake, your brain releases those happy hormones and chemicals through your body. And so it becomes cyclical, right? If you smile, then your brain thinks you're happy. It floods your system with those hormones and then you feel happier. And so affirmations are the same way. Like, we can fake it till we make it. And then eventually they click in. And if you want to amplify them, say them with a smile.
Is it the same for the laughing therapy as well?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah.
About from my husband, he got forced to do it at work. And he was like, hell on earth. All right. It just didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah.
It made me laugh. You're witching. Have you got anything you can share with us about your most, I don't know, successful spell or something that just blew you away when you became a witch?
Oh,
that's a big question.
I know. I think for me, it was writing the book. I was the kid when I was 16. I would carry around like a bucket list in my wallet. And it was all like weird stuff. It was like I wanted the cell phone at the time everyone had. The T-Mobile Sidekick, if I'm aging myself. But I always wrote, I wanted to publish a book. And at 16, this was not on my radar at all. Witchcraft, again, skeptic, yeah. No. I never knew what the book was going to be about, but I just knew I was meant to publish a book. And so I would write that on my bucket list every year. I carried it around in my wallet. It was on my New Year's bingo board that I make every year. And I remember a couple of years ago, saying to Madison, I was like, this is the year that I'm going to make it happen. And I don't know the first place to start. And I'm not really sure what it will be, but I'm asking the universe, my guides, to make the path clear for me. And I remember I was in a Reiki session, and the idea of taking the series of mundane magic that I was doing on Instagram and bringing it to life in book form came to me. And I was like, yeah, that would be fun. People would like that. That'd be really easy. That'd be really like easy for me to do, easy to promote, easy to tie into everything else I'm doing. What feels hard is the publishing side. I don't know the first thing about it. And a couple of weeks later, my agent slid into my DMs. Hey, I listen to your podcast. I think you have a book in you. If you agree, let's meet. And I was like, girl, I sat down with her. She's two types of books I love. Books about witchcraft and books about social justice. And I'm like, girl, I am right in the middle of that Venn diagram. And she's been just the most incredible advocate for this entire thing. And this book would not exist without her, or at least it wouldn't exist in the way it is. And so the whole process of writing the book and getting published and all of that has just felt, I'm not going to say easy because there's challenges and everything, but just aligned. It's felt like there's never been a closed door or a hurdle that I can't overcome. It's just felt like, yes, this book is meant to be out there and I'm just the channel for it. And the people are coming. They're there. It's just there. And so I think that's probably my greatest spell to date. I think the ones that you least expect are the ones that are the most fun to make manifest.
Yeah, it's hardcore manifested that you've been doing pretty much your whole life.
I know.
That's amazing. Oh my God. Congratulations on it, because I bet it's not an easy thing to bring out a book and sell it. But I had to bet that is a completely different ballgame.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I'm learning so much about the world of publishing. I still, just to let y'all know, I still don't know what I'm doing. Like every day I'm just like making it up as I go, but aren't we all in life? But it's just been so fun. Even the moments that are hard are fun. And I think that's a true sign, at least for me in my practice, that I'm doing something right.
Oh, I need to buy it. It's another book I will own.
You're going to love it. It'll make hoovering even better for you. Yeah, I love it.
Hoovering and cleaning windows. I love cleaning windows.
Wow. Yeah, two things I avoid at all costs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That would start, can't stop because you see all the little marks.
Yeah, no, not for me. I would rather not look out the window forever than clean a window. I'm like, no, it's fine. It's just a little hazy. It's fine. I could still see.
Do you have window cleaners in America?
Like people who clean the windows?
Guys that come with a ladder and squeeze you.
Probably in like skyscrapers, not in like residential homes. That's all on us.
Yeah, we have window cleaners and I love him so much.
Really? Oh, that's fascinating. Send him over here. You and him get on a flight. He can clean the windows. You can hoover the house.
So you are a Reiki master. Mm-hmm. And I know you love Reiki. You've got your course going on now where you're teaching 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. I like to say Reiki, my Reiki training is not like other Reiki trainings. I feel like everyone's going to say that. But my first Reiki training that I went through as a skeptic who was trying to understand the experiences I had in Reiki sessions. And bless her soul, the teacher was lovely, so lovely, led a lovely class, didn't work for me because I was the annoying kid on the car ride that was like, but how's it work? Why does it work? What's happening? Why is it going? What's happening?
Right?
And I really needed to be grounded in something real intangible to drop into this intangible experience. And I had completely written it off because of it. And then at the same time, she was like, in order for it to work, you're going to need to, for the next 21 days, spend 90 minutes doing Reiki on yourself. And I was like, cool, I will never do it again.
Whoa, that's great. A lot.
It's pretty common for Reiki teachers to say, after training, you have to do 30, 60, 90 minutes a day. And that just was not, that was the thing I pushed to the bottom of my to-do list and then felt guilty about every day not doing. And like I said, when it comes to the nervous system, consistency is more powerful than duration. And so in Reiki, the same is true. So my training really focuses on the science of how Reiki works so that you can ground into something real and tangible. And we do teach you the full, you know, how to do Reiki 30, 60, 90 minutes. But the thing that really resonates with my students is I teach you how to do Reiki in 2 minutes or less so that when you get cut off in traffic and you're about to freak out and your brain thinks it's a tiger, you can reach for Reiki. Or I was just talking to one of my students yesterday and she said she had this moment where she picked up her cat food bag and she picked it up the wrong way and it spilled everywhere. And she was like, she could feel herself going into that just, everything is bad, like freaking out. And she took this moment and came back to Reiki and was able to come back down and actually laugh at the experience. Be like, this is so funny. This is ridiculous. So cute. My brain thought that this was a tiger. That's the transformation, right? That is so powerful in Reiki, that resilience that you build. And that's what we really focus on in the training. And additionally, I'm a super fiend for supporting my students. We have a whole graduate community that is just like the most loving, supportive place. Because I really believe your Reiki practice doesn't begin and end in a weekend. So why should your training be that long? Yeah, we have students that go through all three levels. They're in the community. They're practicing out in the world. We just had a student who quit her full-time job to do Reiki full-time. And that was like a huge, the whole community is just like celebrating each other and supporting each other and really building like a coven of people who get it and are alike in that way and are aligned in their values. And from what I've seen, that all of those things together don't exist in the Reiki world right now. I hope they do more of, but yeah, it's really just a magical experience and a beautiful community to be a part of. I'm so lucky and grateful and just, it's my favorite thing in the world. Like podcasting and hanging out in that community with all my graduates is just, that's all I need.
You can tell it just shines out of you. It's lovely.
Yeah.
And when you do get Reiki in your life and it becomes in your fiber, you do every day Reiki yourself. I Reiki myself to sleep every night. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't go to sleep any other way now.
Yeah.
It's just how it is and I accept it.
Yeah. Or it's my go-to when something happens in life. The other day I was telling this story to some of my students and I was driving home and I was driving home from a Reiki session that I received. And when you're post session, you're like, all right, I want to hold on to this as long as possible. Nobody stress me out. Don't open my email. Let me stay in this bubble. I was driving home at night and a deer flew out in front of me and it was so close. I could see its eyes. I had to slam on the brakes. All the stuff from the back of my car fell onto the floor. I could feel the screech of my tires. And I like had that fear of, oh my God, I'm going to hit this deer. And I missed it by like a hair, but still my body was like, I could feel my breath and I could feel my heart. And I just felt myself flush. And I was like, like freaking out. And my immediate reaction was, okay, it's okay. We're okay. Put my hand on my heart, started sending myself Reiki. I was like, everything's okay. That was super scary. We reacted perfectly. Yes, that was a tiger. The tiger is gone now. We're safe. We're safe. Like really reassuring my body through that energy that we're okay. And within a minute or two, I was back in that state that I was leaving that healing session. I was back in that state of balance to the point where I got home and my husband was like, how was your day? And I was like, this and this. And oh my God, I almost died. And then got home and whatever. I didn't feel the long-term impacts of that experience, which I would have maybe 10 years ago or so. And I think that's really like the magic of it is when something happens, I have a tool I can reach for that I don't need any special equipment for. I can just do it right there, right then and feel better.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think I have been taught that from my Reiki. Like you can use it as an aid in life in there's a time coming moments. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna now, obviously.
come join Reiki One, the science of self-healing. I'll teach you. I'll walk you through it.
I've got one and two. I'm gonna get free this year and I've decided.
Hell yeah.
All these little nudges from the mass of energy and the universe is a sign. When you do your healing, do you work with any spirit guides or animals, deities? Yeah.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I got a team, like everyone. I've got a team. I think my biggest guide is like Reiki as a just like nebulous entity. Just the support of that energy is probably the one that I receive like the most consistent guidance from. But I have both of my grandmothers, one of which I never really knew in my human life form. In her living life form, I should say. She passed when I was an infant. I never really felt connected to my family. Like the ones that have passed just didn't have that relationship. But when I started really doing energy work, I developed a relationship with her in the spirit world, which was really interesting for me because she's just been a huge part of my team. And then when my most recent grandmother passed, she joined the team too. And then I have a dragon. I got different ones that pop in and out every once in a while. But for me, I don't always see my guides as like a form. Like I'm not really, like I don't receive the guidance in a visual sense. I'm more like claircognizance. Like I feel it just as a knowing or in my body. So some of them may be animals. Don't know. But I definitely have a dragon that I work with quite a bit. And he's just like a quirky little fella.
Has he got a name?
He doesn't. No. Yeah. Oh. He doesn't have a name. I have asked. And it's not clear to me if it's, I don't think it's, he doesn't want to tell me its name. It's more so like a nameless entity, but the name is like more of a feeling, if that makes sense. Yeah. So it's not George or whatever. It's more so just like a feeling I can't really like verbalize, I guess, is the way that the name is a clairsentient name, I guess.
It is really hard to describe what happens when you do Reiki. I have a Reiki horse who comes in. And he changes all the time, different colors, different breeds.
Oh, cool.
And he behaves to reflect the client. So if the client's tired, it'll be asleep. If the client's angry, it'll be like booking.
Oh, cool.
Drinking. If the client's thirsty, always I go, are you thirsty? Because horse is drinking. I'm like, oh, yeah, really? I am it.
Oh, that's so cool.
I love it. He's so good. And he can be quite moody. He makes me work for his assistants, shall we say. But I've had him probably a year off two now, and he's completely transformed the way I do Reiki. Do you get messages for your clients?
Yeah, the messages I get are always like, my students will tell you, I'm always teaching in like these weird analogies. If you listen to the podcast, you know this, but I'm always teaching in these weird analogies, and just my brain is not wired for floofy, beautiful aesthetic analogies like a lot of spiritual teachers. And so the information that I receive from clients is often not floofy and aesthetic. It's often like nonsensical or strange, but like perfectly what they need. For instance, I had a client, one of my first clients in Reiki. I remember when I was working on her, I kept seeing a fretboard, but I described it not like a guitar. It was like a fancy fretboard, like an upright bass or something. I was like, what the hell does this mean? I kept asking my guides. I was like, a little more here. Don't know. What are we doing here? And at the end of the session, I was like, what is your relationship to music? And she was like, I play the violin. And I was like,
isn't it good?
Yeah. And playing the violin ended up being the unlock that she needed to move through what she was working on. And yeah, I always just find stuff like that is cool. Or I've had sessions where I've done distance sessions where I'm not like on Zoom with people, but just like asynchronously sending Reiki. And afterwards, I'll be like, for whatever reason, the color blue kept coming through and I kept getting this vision of water. So if that resonates for you, maybe connect with that element. And I remember I got a text back in all caps. It was like, shut the fuck up. I was in the bath.
Ah, there you go.
And so stuff like that, I love it. I love it so much.
It never ceases to amaze me. And sometimes I can't believe it myself that I have this ability to receive this thing, write it down. And whereas I totally forget, I can't keep hold of it. I've got to write it down as I go. And at the end, I read it out. And they're like, oh my God, how could you even know that? It's amazing. And I'm so thankful I can do it. And I don't question it. I used to be like, am I just making this show? But I'm not, because what the hell?
Totally. Can you hear my dog barking?
Yeah, it's all right.
Okay, let me shut the door.
When I do Reiki, I had this incredible moment where I was doing a lady and she was crying. And that's quite often how it goes. People cry because of the emotions. And as she was crying, I got the word bottomless pit. So like, to me, bottomless pit is like eating and you're never full. You got a good appetite. So when I was telling her, I was reading out anything I got, and I said to her, I've got the words bottomless pit. And she gasped. And I said, oh, does that mean something? And she went, when you were raking me and I was crying, I felt like I was falling down a bottomless pit.
Whoa.
And that just gave me so much goosebumps, because it's a really great example about you get what you get and there's no context. So it is just for the client, you're not meant to know. And it's like completely opposite ends of what that actually meant. It's incredible.
Yeah, I love it. I love it so much.
So where can we find you then?
You can find my book wherever books are sold. It comes out February 17th. It's called Mundane Magic.
Oh,
woohoo. And wherever you're listening to this podcast, you can find my podcast. Just search up Demystify Magic. I think if you like this podcast, you'll like our podcast. Very similar. We definitely have some overlap in listeners, because your podcast always comes up in our Patreon when people are like, what other witchy podcasts do you listen to? This one always comes up. So I think those would be probably the two places I would start with. Of course, I'm on all the platforms and my website is just my name and you can find me there. But I think the book and the podcast is, if you liked what you heard here, those are the places I would send you next.
And are you doing a tour, like a book signing thing?
Oh, yeah. Not over your way yet, but...
You're going to manifest it.
I've always wanted to go to London. That's always, for whatever reason, I've always had just like a calling to Big Ben. I don't know why. I know nothing about Big Ben. You could tell me like it fell down 10 years ago and I won't know. But I've just felt like there are probably three places in the world that I felt really deeply called to and don't know why. And Big Ben specifically is one of them. So I'm sure I'll find my way over there eventually in this lifetime. But if enough people ask me to come over.
Well, asking you.
I know.
You didn't go to Yorkshire though. None of that stubbornness. You need to get up here.
I don't even know where Yorkshire is. So I'd have to print out a map, like and figure it out.
You can go around the country in like a day. Come back home and it's good.
I know. You can barely get around my state in a day. And we're in a small state. We're in Maine. Texas is like four of our states. It's wild.
Oh my God. How many UKs can you get in America?
Yeah, that's a fun question. Dude, I bet.
Somebody knows the answer. I know it.
Yeah, someone let us know. Someone let me know. I want to know.
Silly. So to end with, I usually ask if you've got a tip for a witch, like how to live the most witchy life, or Reiki, or something you always give people when they ask you for your advice.
As like a starting point or anything?
Anything, I think.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Is that too hard? I could do starting point. That's easier.
No,
I'm making your work tonight.
A lot of pressure here. My God. I just wrote like 60,000 words in this book. Do you want me to solidify it into one tip? My God. No, but in all seriousness, I think the number one thing is always remember that you are the magic. You're going to find a million podcasts, a million books, a million tips about witchcraft, about your practice, how your practice should be, how your practice could be, how other people's practices are. But at the end of the day, you're doing this for you. It's got to work for you. And so whatever your practice looks like matters not nearly as much as what it feels like. So if you can, whatever you're doing in your practice, just come back to you, how you're feeling, your intention, what feels deeply resonant within you, what feels right to you, right? That discernment, then you'll follow the path you're meant to. And just drown out the rest of the noise. Drown out anything that pulls you away from that.
Thank you so much, Molly. It's been an absolute blast.
Thank you.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Just thank you so much. And I'm going to take you up on hoovering my house.
And that concludes Molly's interview with the Bell Witch podcast. Isn't she fabulous? Do go over and have a look at Demystify Magic and her new book, Mundane Magic. That's it from me. Thank you for tuning in to the Bell Witch podcast, made with love and magic by me, Swales, the Friendly Green Witch. Stay magical, witches.